Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike Golic Jr. is a NFL analyst for DraftKings. He also hosts a studio show with his dad each and every weekday. Gojo and Golic, it's anchoring the DraftKings morning show lineup. You can watch it from 7 until 9 locally. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Golic Jr. Kind enough to join us now. I guess, Jr., let's start here. How much would you buy that we would see the top four picks be quarterbacks?
Oh, man, I've learned to stop doubting the NFL's thirst for that position, especially given everything we know about the contract value and the need of some of these teams. So I would not be very surprised at all at this point to see it somehow go 1, 2, 3, 4 here. If we're doing that versus the field, I'd probably bet that, with the outlier certainly being, hey, you know, I'm not sure what it looks like for New England at this point just because of the place they're at with that roster.
If indeed the reports are out there that Arizona's asking 3 firsts for number 4, do you have enough faith in, if we're making the assumption Caleb's going 1 and either May or Daniels go 2 and 3. I mean, is it going to be J.J. McCarthy? That just feels like a ton to bet on a guy that, man, I have no idea on.
So it's interesting to compare that to what we saw the 49ers do for Trey Lance a few drafts ago, right? Where it's a similar price tag for, I think, similar selling points for the player in this physical ability that feels like there's even more of a ceiling to, because in college, in Trey's case, it was just a lack of games started overall. Part of that was the pandemic season and how that affected FCS football differently than FBS football. But for J.J. McCarthy, it's, I think, a lack of volume in passing reps, right? This is an offense that ran primarily through the ground. And so it's interesting to consider the two of those, because our thought in that draft was, well, if you're going to spend that kind of capital, you might as well go for the physical upside. Someone who's got a tremendous amount of ability that maybe if you hit right, boy, do you have something here. And I don't know if it's the blowback from that, if it's the fact that we've had a little bit more exposure to J.J. McCarthy in some big moments and have questions about why they didn't necessarily go to him as often in pivotal moments as Trey Lance had at North Dakota State. I don't know why it feels different, because to me those are very similar situations. So I could see the justification for it, even if I'm also someone that now maybe learned a little bit from that last time and went, all right, I'm a little bit more worried about this person potentially losing me my job based off ability in a league that we've seen is so much more about the environment you're bringing these quarterbacks into than just the ability of that player themselves.
Have we ever seen someone that, you know, I mean, my deal with McCarthy is, and I watched a lot of Michigan because my co-host is not here today. He's a big Michigan guy. So I'd watch a lot of Michigan. And yes, it's obviously a run-first offense. And when you have an offensive line that is as dominant as they are, I understand, let's not risk anything. But even when, I feel like even when they asked him to kind of throw it to, you know, win the game, man, I just left to me a lot to be desired. Have we ever seen someone that doesn't really flash really in college go on to be an all-time great? Or, you know, I mean, this is what you're justifying, you know, a first-round pick, you know, a 10-year starter for a team in the NFL.
Yeah, no, listen, it certainly, I think we've seen overall with quarterbacks, even for guys that have flashed in college, it's a bit of a crapshoot. Again, I keep pointing back to environment. It's what you're bringing this guy into that's ultimately going to dictate that. That's why when people talk about, hey, if J.J. McCarthy got picked 3 overall by the New England Patriots, well, all of a sudden I have a lot more concerns, because that roster doesn't have nearly enough help on there to offset a guy who I think needs more time to cook. But all of a sudden, if you're talking about Minnesota trading up and you've got maybe the best wide receiver in football and Justin Jefferson there, now we're cooking with a little bit different brand of gas. And so I think he's very dependent on that. But no, it is a little bit more of an outlier given his situation. But what I can say in J.J.'s defense, because I generally tend to skew the way you do, is some of the stuff that he did do is a lot of the stuff that we look for top picks to do. Hey, when you can, be able to create on the move, be able to create rolling away, doing these off-platform throws, crazy arm angles, the arm strength and versatility, and some of the athletic ability that are the hallmark of more modern NFL quarterbacks, that stuff's all there. But again, it goes back to, it's just in a much more limited sample size than most of the rest of the guys we're talking about.
Do you think if Texas would have completed the insane comeback and let's say, you know, one of those passes at the end gets caught, it's a touchdown, and our last viewing of Penix is an unbelievable performance, in that case you'd say, well, they lost, but it wasn't his fault. Do you feel like he's getting nitpicked like he is? Because it feels like so much of it is just getting determined by, he looked bad against Michigan, and I'm sitting there going, everyone looked bad against Michigan.
I think a lot more of it with Michael Penix Jr. is what happens to quarterbacks who we have a lot of tape on. Like, we see this all the time. I always go back to, you know, think about the Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, Mitch Trubisky draft.
Yeah.
Where Mitch Trubisky, a year starter at North Carolina, but man, all that ability. And Deshaun Watson, who, you know, obviously prognosticating what we've seen happen in the future with him off the field, but strictly as a player, that was a guy we had a book out on. That was a guy whose coach called him the Michael Jordan of their team and had produced like that at a big-time program in Clemson, and yet we had so much tape on him, we went through and we nitpicked everything. And so I think there's some of that with Michael Penix Jr., but a lot of it with him is just a looming injury thing. For a 24-year-old quarterback with the injury sheet as long as his is, that's a concern for almost anybody at any position, let alone the quarterback position where you're handing the guys a key to a multi-billion-dollar franchise.
All right, I want to pick your brain on this one because I'm very curious. Is Joe Alt the best tackle available?
Yes, especially given what NFL teams, I think, by and large, need to prioritize now, which is who comes in the most ready to go. And Joe Alt's certainly in that category where he's the cleanest there. And I do think there's still a ton of upside. This is a guy that was a tight end when he was in high school. This is a guy that's only about 21 years old now and has all of the physical tools you could ask for. We saw he was, you know, miles per hour, the fastest 40 runner in the combine, or up near the top in that range. He's certainly a mountain of a man, like Ogden-esque in terms of how difficult it is just to get around him. The arm length shows up all over the tape, and he's got the pedigree based on the coaching he's received at Notre Dame from Harry Hiestand, who was my offensive line coach my last year, who I think is the best modern offensive line coach in college football, and Joe Rudolph now, who's got plenty of pedigree coming over from years at Wisconsin where he developed pros. And so I think that coming in an NFL that just doesn't have enough time on the field to develop offensive linemen the way they used to has to be the priority. There are other guys that might have even more ability. I think Olufashinu from Penn State is a guy whose ceiling might be the highest of all these guys we're talking about based on the power he can generate. And again, being young, having a lot of those physical tools. But if you're looking for a guy to come in right now, day one, and impact your program, if you're the Los Angeles Chargers, if you're the Tennessee Titans, I think Joe Alt's your guy.
Does this draft feel light on defensive guys to you, or is it just, have we just reached the point in which we're just getting fascinated with, you know, who's going to help our offense?
I think it's twofold. I think we just do really have an incredible crop of, like, deep receiver talent, deep offensive line talent in general. I mean, I think the over-under I saw at our sports book was, like, 9.5 for offensive linemen in the first round, and the over seems like it could hit with some of the guys that we have, especially even on the interior. But I think defensively, too, it's just kind of an interesting class where there's not necessarily, like, a dynamite Will Anderson Jr. where it's, okay, well, physically he checks out. He had all this production in college. There's not really a lot we have to worry about. Dallas Turner is much more physically gifted than his counterpart Will Anderson Jr. ever was, but the production never quite matched that level of intensity. Leatu Latu has the injury history and the neck injury that forced him away from Washington and down to UCLA. Jared Verse, a great player, maybe some concerns against the run. Everyone you can kind of poke holes in. I think the secondary class has some good players, but overall I just think this is an offensive league right now. You've got compelling prospects at a couple of the vital positions and the guys that protect the quarterbacks and the guys that they're throwing to, and the priority tends to fall there.
I think the thing that was interesting to me, though, it's, okay, we can acknowledge with the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes is he can be an entire offense. But to me, the thing that really stood out about the game is, like, Chris Jones ends up taking over that game in the second half, and he's every bit the reason that they won that Mahomes was. And, like, I'm just wondering, are we starting to devalue guys that can truly wreck the game up front?
I don't think so. I think it's always just, you know, kind of secondary to some of what we've seen on offense. And I think that tide could shift right now. Like, I think in this draft, what's going to be fascinating to watch is just the position group you mentioned. What's going to happen at D tackle in this draft with especially a guy like Byron Murphy, who coming out of Texas, I think is the top defensive tackle prospect in this draft and has a potential to be that guy. He's been it since day one. You talk to Sark and the rest of the coaches on staff there, and they pointed that guy out day one he walked on campus and said, 90 in burnt orange, that dude is different. And so I think in a league where we've seen things spread out a little bit more and we've seen offenses respond by trying to pound the rock a little bit more this last couple of seasons, you're going to see a premium on defensive tackles. I'm fascinated to watch what the off-ball linebacker market becomes like in the next couple of years, as that's a position that's gotten light and thin and gotten a lot of teams beat up because of it recently. And so I think if it's, you know, quote-unquote devalued, that's only going to last so long right now because the league we've seen kind of shift back to, hey, we're going to try and pound the rock while we've got this market inefficiency until you do something about it.
Do you think that's largely because so many defenses now are saying, all right, forget it, we're not giving up the big play, we're going to make you drive at the length of the field, you know, we'll play two high, we'll play four high, and so you're going to run against lighter boxes. Is that the primary reason you think we're seeing the shift?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think you saw body type changes reflect that, right? Like the linebacker position, you look at the guys coming out of the draft now, 225, maybe 230 pounds, you don't have downhill thumpers anymore. You don't have a lot of guys built like that. The premium has been put on, hey, pass rush specialists on the edge, guys that can play three techniques and get after the quarterback that are more Aaron Donald size, and linebackers that you can use in blitz schemes and going down towards the quarterback, not necessarily that are built to take on guards coming up the middle. And so offenses said, all right, if that's what you want to do and take away all these big plays, that's fine. You look at the Kansas City Chiefs last year, the Buffalo Bills last year, certainly the Eagles the last couple of seasons, the 49ers, on and on down the list. All of these teams were more than happy to say, we'll flex it down to 2 and 3 tight end formations, and we'll just try and run this thing down your throat right now because you're, in most cases, not physically or personnel-wise able to go and absorb these body blows now.
Do you think also with the removal of the hip drop tackle, is it going to be even harder to bring down tight ends?
I think so. I think that's one of those things that, man, it feels like a nerve right now, but they talked about it, the lack, you know, the frequency of that player, lack thereof, is more, I think, an example, like another high-profile example, when you get a player like Mark Andrews that goes down that moment and you see some of these other examples, it's easy to point to, but I really don't think it happens frequently enough to change the game super drastically in that way. I think we're just fortunate right now. We've got a group and a generation of tight ends that have come up now to produce guys like Brock Bowers who are coming out that are so, hey, we're going to catch passes first. We're going to be a dynamic threat you can use all over the field, and we'll be a value add enough in the run game. Think Travis Kelce with the Kansas City Chiefs, so that when we get into those multi-tight end sets, you've got to respect me as an option here, even if I'm not the most devastating blocker in the world.
We're wrapping up here with Mike Golic Jr. Again, DraftKings NFL analyst. Also, check out his studio show that he does with his dad each and every morning on the DraftKings Network. What'd you make of the Stephon Diggs trade?
It seemed like we finally found the fire where all that smoke was coming up, going back to last offseason, where it seemed like the relationships inside that building with Stephon Diggs and his quarterback, maybe even his coach, had all soured to a point where it was just no longer tenable inside that locker room. And for a team, when you look down the stretch of last season that found themselves on the ground building a game designed by Joe Brady when he took over at offensive coordinator, that was, we're going to hand the ball off, we're going to go and use our battering ram of a quarterback and Josh Allen as part of that run game, and we're going to work through them and the tight ends that we've drafted. Dalton Kincaid, their first-round pick last year, to go along with Dawson Knox. I just think the plan kind of changed for them, and if they were no longer going to feel like they could make this a tenable situation enough behind the scenes to keep going at the production they had, combined with the fact that, listen, Stephon Diggs is the wrong side of 30 now. He's a guy who you saw that production wane at the end of last season. They felt like, all right, we can get this money off the books now. We can start to turn the page, and I'm sure prioritize wide receiver in this draft now. I know, you know, offensive line, corner, or other needs that you look at, but now that wide receiver room between him and Gabe Davis gone this offseason, you've got to go up and you've got to find a guy that's going to be your new X number one receiver there. But I think that was an admission that the things that we had been kind of hearing leak out of there at least had some semblance of truth to them.
Mike, you're great to join us. Really appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks, guys.
That is Mike Golic Jr. He, of course, a DraftKings NFL analyst
Also check out his studio show that he does with his dad, Gojo and Golic. It is Birdie's first anniversary, and they're celebrating this week as we have Masters Week upon us. There's going to be lots of great giveaways. You can get a Tito's-themed golf bag from Vessel. You can get an Elijah Craig-themed golf bag from Bridgestone. They'll also have a Mick Ultra-themed golf bag from Sun Mountain. They'll also have $3 Mick Ultra drafts available, and they'll be open early this week, starting on Thursday and Friday. They will be open at 9 a.m. so that everybody can catch the early rounds. Also, don't forget, on Sunday, they will have a two-person scramble. And you can, I believe we have room for six more teams, so it's 12 total. So there's room for six more teams. If you want to sign up, go follow them on Instagram and send them a DM at Birdies901. 493 South Main Street, Suite 101, golfatbirdies.com.